It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're doing today's show from the Nancy Lake Canoe System, the beautiful series of lakes that are near Willow, just like an hour and 20 minutes north of Anchorage. And here late in the season, paddling out and canoeing. And so we're going to be talking about that, how you can do one of these trips even in October. And we're, of course, pre-recording. I'm out on the lake right now. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about skating. This is a great place to come for a skating adventure. You can stay in a cabin, you know, hot chocolate, cozy, or even skiing through here, or biking on the ice. So really close to Anchorage, really easy place to do a weekend trip. Nancy Lake Canoe Route. So stick with us for Outdoor Explorer. So the Nancy Lake system is a series of lakes. And that means that when you get done paddling down one lake, you have to get out, get your stuff out of the canoe, lift your canoe out of the water, and portage to the next lake. Most of these portages are really pretty short, so not too difficult, but it certainly adds some effort to the whole thing. Water over your boot?
No, I'm fine.
We're paddling on James Lake. We've just left the cabin where we had had a restful night, at least I did. It's a beautiful weather. I think it's the 8th of October, and it's just like almost like an Indian summer. It's so nice. And so anyway, my companion here is Steve Gerlich, who's paddling the canoe. And he's been coming out here for quite a while. I think he said you'd been to this cabin like 20 times or something?
So I've been out here almost 20 years now with my kids as they've grown up, and this is probably my 50th time here.
Oh, wow.
We like to come in the spring and in the fall, do the shoulder seasons, when there's not a whole lot of bugs and not a whole lot of people around. And it's been great to see my kids grow up here on this trip.
One of the appeals, obviously, is it's so convenient, right? It's so easy to get here.
So the big attraction to us is that it's a very quick escape from Anchorage. It's just past Wasilla, so it's a little bit over an hour to get here to the trailhead. And then you have to go on the shortest way in. It's five lakes and five portages, and each lake you just get further and further away from Anchorage. And as the kids have grown up, when they're smaller, that takes generally about 3 hours. But now my boys are in their early 20s, and we did it this spring in just under an hour. So this is the closest, remotest cabin to Anchorage. So it's just a great escape to get away for an evening with the kids.
Yeah, and you reserved it online, and I guess in October it's not that hard to get the get reservations, and probably in the spring the same deal.
No, actually you've got to be pretty good at it. A lot of people have figured it out.
Oh, really?
So I actually got mine about maybe 4 months ahead of time. But it really depends on when the ice comes in. The first third of October is when you start seeing ice in the shallows and in the bays, and that's still navigable. There's still techniques to canoe around that, but by mid-October, although it could be early October some years, you get full ice cover and then it's unsafe.
You said you come in the spring too. Do you try to be like the first in?
Yeah, yes we do. And that's kind of interesting too, because during breakup, it's unsafe for travel, so you don't get the snow machiners or the skiers in. And many times we've got to the cabin, we're the first people there in the last 5 or 6 weeks on the logbook. So the trails have started to be a little bit overgrown, and it's just really an interesting experience.
Did anybody fill in the logbook this morning?
No, we didn't. I saw our entry from the spring with my boys, but no, we didn't. We should have.
Oh, well. So people will find out somehow.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that you bring along those Presto logs. And I don't know how many people do that, but it certainly makes it easy to get the cabin warmed up.
Yeah, part of the thing about bringing kids in the wilderness is you want to sort of guarantee a good experience where they're not wet and miserable, and there's not a whole lot of bugs. And so I've taken to bringing those fake Duralogs, wrap them in a plastic drawstring bag, and put a little stick on it so the kids can carry those, and then you can immediately get a fire going. As you saw last night when you went out and got the wood, it was all wet from the rain we had, and it was smoky and very difficult to get going. So if you can get your kids in the cabin, nice and warm, with some candles and some food in them, they just think it's great and will want to do it again.
So, I mean, one of the things about coming out to cabins is you really can't count on finding wood. I mean, you can find a little wood here and there, but it's not like when you're camping in the backcountry where wood is often pretty plentiful. You kind of have to think about how you're gonna warm the cabin up, especially early spring, late fall, or wintertime trips.
Yeah, that's true. In the when it gets cold at night, the cabins tend to cold soak, and it takes a bit more energy to get them warm up versus in the summer.
Have you done any of these cabin trips out here in the winter?
Actually, I did with my daughter. This was probably 15 years ago, before fat tire bikes and before you could buy studded tires. And so we actually made studded tires for her 24-inch bike and my 28-inch bike. And we rode out here in late November when there was ice on the lakes and right up and down through the portages. And the lakes were just like big parking lots, and it was just remarkable to get out to the cabin. But the coldest it got was like 9 below Fahrenheit, so you know, we needed quite a bit of fire, quite a bit of firewood to keep things warm. But that was a remarkable experience with my daughter. We talk about it all the time. Great bonding experience.
Yeah, well, and we're going to talk in the second half more about some winter trips. I had a rather chilly winter trip out here myself. And I think it does make sense, you know, if you're coming in the winter to pull a sled and bring plenty of kindling and firewood in the sled, as you know, as well as maybe you'll find stuff, but maybe you won't, right? And often when you get to a cabin, there won't be any firewood because whoever was there before will have burned it all up. Thoughts about bringing kids on a canoe trip where you're portaging and I mean, sort of as the dad, you sort of carrying a lot of extra, but did you try to get the little kids to carry stuff too?
Absolutely. It's a learning experience for them. And also we brought two dogs out here and taught them to be water dogs to get in and out of the canoe. So it was a learning experience for the whole family to figure this out. And early on, we were very inefficient. Multiple carries. We had big plastic Tupperware canoes that were extraordinarily heavy, but we've got this nice Kevlar canoe now and a system down where it's just one carry across and all the kids know what their chores are and how to do it. Plus, this route is very easy. It's not real steep on the portages. Getting in and out of the canoe has got little landings and docks, so it's quite easy for kids.
Yeah, it's kind of the Swan Lake canoe route is kind of similar. That you've got these, you know, for the most part, they're pretty level getting back between it, but you don't really paddle for that long between them either. The lakes are all pretty small. So, when you had little kids, did you try to cram everybody into one canoe, or was it one parent in each canoe, or in two canoes, or how did you do that?
Well, we did it various times. I would try to take each of my kids out individually to have an experience with them, but quite frequently we would come with other families, so we had multiple canoes out here in the past as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, a little backup assistance, yeah. I mean, my experience is that the younger the kids, the more stuff you end up carrying.
Right.
Right, so that you like feel like you're like a moving caravan through the desert, you know, of every conceivable thing.
Right, and then sometimes with a kid, it's nice for them to have a friend along and they can keep themselves occupied while you're busy getting the fire going or cooking dinner and so forth. And that's just another level experience to have a friend in the woods.
Yeah,
experience stuff.
For sure. So this canoe is really, really light. Tell me about the canoe.
So I got this from a guiding outfit probably 20 years ago. The design hasn't changed much. It only weighs 34 pounds. So it's very easy, and I can use it with a dry bag on my back, so I can carry everything basically in one swoop.
And you've got this great—I don't know if I'd call it a yoke. It's sort of a padded yoke that you can like just throw the canoe up on your shoulders and carry it by yourself.
Exactly right, and it also flips around and becomes a third seat. And I've modified the canoe so all the seats have got foam pads, so it's nice and warm in the spring and in the fall. And the pad that you're sitting on, the blue one, that was for the dogs, so that they would be above the water so they wouldn't get so cold.
Oh, cool. And do you do much canoeing in the midsummer, or do you just confine it to the shoulder seasons?
In the midsummer out here, the bugs can be just awful. I mean, it can be nice if you catch it right, and a lot of people are now swimming out here, but the bugs can just drive you crazy. So in the summer, I tend to do sea kayaking and those sort of things, or maybe alpine climbing where you're above where the bugs are.
Yeah. So what do you think about food with family, as opposed to food when you're sort of like, just with the adults or just by yourself? Do you have thoughts about like what kind of food you do with kids?
I think it depends on what your kids grew up with. But Ramen is really easy with vegetables. We do that quite a bit. Pancakes, like we had this morning, you can make buckwheat blueberry pancakes very easily in the woods if you think about it ahead of time and get your ingredients separated. So there's no reason why you should, why it should be a difficult experience for children. And that's part of the thing, is keep making sure that they're warm, they're dry, and they're well fed with good food, and they'll want to do it again, and they'll remember it the rest of their lives.
Right, but also you have to, when you're portaging, it's similar to backpacking. You really can't go overboard with heavy food. I mean, you can, for a one-day trip, I guess it doesn't matter too much.
Right.
But
and these portages are short enough where you you can bring, juice and stuff like that, liquids.
You don't have to be too extreme about it. We're coming up to another portage. This is really pretty. Look at how the water sort of goes into that little marsh over there. So quiet. It's interesting that it's this quiet, this close to Anchorage, because like as a crow flies, we're really not that far away.
That's correct, right. Although you do get traffic from the base. Like last night we heard they were out on maneuvers, so sometimes there's a little bit of airplane traffic, but you pretty much see that most of Alaska.
Yeah, and so there's cabins on Lynx Lake, and there are a lot of cabins on Nancy Lake. We put in at Tenaya Lake, which is, and then there's another lake beyond that where there's a rental operation, right?
Yeah, South Raleigh Lake is where the big campground is. So there are canoes down there, and it's RV camping, tent camping in the summer. But yes, you put in at Tenaya, and then you go through Milo Pond, and then Little No-Luck, Big No-Luck Lake, and then Chicken Lake, and then finally at James Lake. And when you get out here, it's the only cabin on this lake. So it's definitely a remote experience.
Yeah, it's really private. So in South Raleigh, can you do a canoeing loop from there, or do you just have to do it from Tenaya?
There are other bigger loops that go down through there, and one that goes out through Red Shirt Lake. But those tend to be multi-day trips.
Yeah. This is sort of the one overnight one.
Right.
All right, so we're pulling up to the portage here, and there's a little dock, and I'll just leave the recorder on and see how this sounds.
So should we go sideways to the dock so you can get out? Yeah, let's swing it around here. Yep, good morning.
And bring it up farther. This is a really nice one for getting out. Whoa! That was very close.
That was really close.
So we're done with that portage, and now we're in Owl Lake, which is like another really beautiful lake. I mean, all lakes are pretty much the same, except they have different shape and stuff, and this one's very protected, so not so much wind. So, Steve, adventures you've had out here, if any, or has everything always gone perfectly?
No, but if you plan properly, it doesn't. The adventures tend to be of a good kind.
Yeah.
But what I remember about this place is just the timeliness of it. Each time you come up, the trails are the same, even over the last 20 years. The only thing that has changed is really my kids have grown up, and technology has changed. And we were talking about this last night, the arc of technology. When we first came out here for emergency contact, we had to bring CB radios, and we would connect up with the people up and down the Richardson Highway in that communication system. And then over time...
Parks Highway.
Excuse me, the Parks Highway. And then over time, we would get one bar of cell phone service by a particular lake, and that's what we could call Grandma.
Yeah, you were saying that there, which island it was, there you had to go to, right?
And now, from the cabin, the front door of the cabin. I was getting text messages this morning, and you can stream Spotify. And it's the same thing with music. My family likes to hear music, and when we first came out here, we had Sony Walkmans, and then Radio Shack was selling these speakers that you could plug in with a bunch of AA batteries. And now, today, tonight, I brought in a Jambox, a big Jambox that's Bluetooth compatible, and anyone's playlist can play. So that has changed. My kids have grown up.
Although we didn't get around to it, we were just so busy drinking wine and talking that we didn't need any music. It is quite the talkative crowd here.
Right. Yeah. But it is timeliness. I mean, it's just remarkable. It's just a ton of fun.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that the facilities here are in pretty good shape. I mean, the cabin's in really good shape after all these years, and the boardwalks between the lakes are, on the most part, pretty well maintained. Seems like it's been, you know, State Parks has done a pretty good job up here.
Also, I think, you know, you can read the logbook, and clearly this cabin is loved by a number of families the same way mine is. And they come out and they treat it with that sort of reverence and respect it, make it look a little better before they leave than how they found it, and leave some firewood for the next folks. And we've never had a problem. We've never had a problem with reservations out here, people staying longer, never had found a trashy situation. It's just is a wonderful spot.
Yeah, yeah, and it differs at different cabins according to who the user groups are.
Right.
The way the reservation works is you get online and make the reservation, and you pay, I think you said it's $50
a night?
Yeah, it's probably going to go up. Yeah. And then you come out, and there's nobody to check the reservation. It's just like if there was somebody else there, you'd show them you had the paper, and they'd have to clear out.
Right. Yeah. And you also get a parking pass for the parking at Tenaya Lake, so you want to put that in your vehicle. And also Alaskans get I think it's a 1 or 2 month preference over outside the people in the Lower 48 who might want to book that cabin as well.
Yeah, you can do it 7 months instead of 6 months, which essentially means that people from outside can never get the cabins. Which, I guess that's okay. You used to have to go down to DNR and go to the desk, but now it's just all really easy online. But I think maybe more people do it because it's online, you know? I don't know. It seems like that sometimes these cabins can be quite difficult to get. You really have to plan way, way ahead.
Right. Early on, yeah, when we had to go down to, I think it was the Frontier Building, you could actually make friends with people, and because you did it a number of times, they tend to knew you and knew what you were about, and it was easy to make reservations. Now it's a bit more impersonal, and because of the cutbacks, you hardly ever see a ranger or park service person out here, and it's pretty much on the honor system.
Right, and they used to have like a little on-the-spot lottery too, so if two people walked up to the desk
right. By
the deadline, they'd put their names in a hat and draw
right
them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, yeah.
Yeah. So have you rented? I think I've rented from that outfit there in Raleigh Lake.
Tippy Canoe?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Tippy Canoe. If you don't have a canoe, you can call them up. You can find them on a website, and they will rent you canoes. And they have them at the major portages that you can drive to. And they'll give you a key, and you can unlock your canoe and take it for an afternoon or multiple days.
Yeah. And then our companions, Tippy Canoe is shut down by now in October. Our companions rented from REI. And REI rents a lot of outdoor equipment, and a pretty nice canoe. It's kind of like one of those L.L. Bean Penobscot canoes.
Right.
You know, it's not as
plastic
nice as your...
It's a plastic boat. It's a little bit more heavy on the portages, but pretty bomb-proof.
Yeah, yeah, and it's in pretty good shape. And the price that they're paying is quite reasonable, I assume, because REI probably wants people to come in and get the rest of their gear there. So the other thing you need is dry bags, which are kind of rubberized bags, and it's really important that they have back... you know, shoulder straps, so you
right. Can
carry them through the portages.
Right. And quite often in the spring and in the fall, you do get rain. So as well as, you know, in case you have an issue with your canoe or water in from the lake, it'll keep all your gear dry until you get to the cabin.
So you've made your reservation 4 or 5 months before, and the time comes, and it's cold, it's rainy, it's maybe a bit icy. Would you ever just scrub the trip, or do you just like say, whatever, maybe it'll get better when we're out there?
Well, we have a saying in our family, which is there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad gear. So if you're properly prepared, you can, even little kids, you need hats and mittens and a thermos of hot chocolate, but they're pretty hardy. And if you treat the experience right, they'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
Even the worst weather.
So have you done any fishing out here?
Not much. We're not much into fishing, although my son Peter caught his first fish, in fact, right here on Awa Lake, a giant pike, when he was like 11 years old. and they fight like crazy. So he was just ecstatic. I mean, it was really kind of, it's one of his better memories of these trips.
Yeah, I have a similar memory with my son, Robin, in the Swan Lake canoe route of just having really light gear, a lure. We're paddling along, and it's just sort of dragging along, and you don't think, oh, we're probably going to catch anything. Oh, my gosh, there's a little trout, you know, and it's for a kid. It's so exciting.
It is, yep.
What about wildlife? What kind of wildlife sightings have you made?
Well, of course, most people, especially with kids out here, are cautious about bears. But, you know, we have never seen one in almost 20 years we've been out here. We've seen occasional scat signs, and so what we say is probably more bears have seen us than we've seen them. And then moose.
But we haven't seen any scat on this trip, and I don't think I've seen much here in the past either.
Actually, right after Milo Lake, I saw a little bit. Oh. I had the canoe in my head, so I didn't point it out to everybody. But yeah, it's just relatively minor. But you do see a lot of moose. You see a lot of beavers, muskrats, certainly a lot of birds. The loons are gone now, but most of the time you'll have a pair of loons on every lake up here.
Yeah, we've seen some just a little bit of waterfowl, which have been pretty, and really nice evening skies and morning skies. I mean, right. it's really, really scenic. And the land here is interesting because it's kind of nice. There's a lot of nice upland here that's similar to the rolling hills sort of at Kincaid Park with the, you know, birch and white spruce. And then there's also quite a bit of swamp and sort of black spruce right around the lakes.
Right. And that's where typically you'll see the moose, as they'll be hanging out down there browsing. But we've also seen swans in season. They stop over here. And river otters. We've seen a family of river otters before. So it's just a matter of being observant, being out here at the right time.
Now, down on the Kenai Peninsula at the Swan Lake canoe route, some of the water level has kind of gone down pretty far in some of the lakes, and you see the meadow sort of coming more into the lakes, presumably because of sort of drier summers and stuff. This fall has been quite wet. I think it was like the wettest September ever, you know, so the water's pretty high here. Have you noticed any pattern, any changes over the 20 years you've been coming here in terms of climate or differences about, you know, what it's like here?
Well, it seems like most of these lakes are augmented or made by beaver dams. And you look at the outlets of the streams, and so the beavers, they come and go in waves. And forest fires, it hasn't been a forest fire in the 20 years, but I've talked to people who have been out here even earlier than that, and occasionally when they come through, that'll, you know, dramatically change the scene here. But then the forest will reclaim it and grow back. And I've noticed in the logbooks that the lakes are getting warmer. When we first came out here, a swim in the summer would be a very refreshing, quick dip. And I just in the logbook read about this summer, last night, was a family that came here and they spent all afternoon swimming in the lake with their kids. And that's just remarkable.
Right. Well, it was such a crazy warm summer. I bet the water really got warmed up. I mean, it's probably still not warm, but...
At least no ice.
Well, we're coming to the far side of Owl Lake now, so another portage. So that's it. Now you've got the exact amount of time it takes to get across the lake. Looks like about nine and a half minutes on this lake. And it's interesting in terms of figuring your distances. The whole thing, I guess, was about 3.5 miles in, going the counterclockwise direction from Tenaya Lake to James Lake, and then maybe 5.5 miles going the other way, which is what we're doing now. But the time on the water, and the time actually walking between the lakes, is pretty minimal. It's really the time getting the canoes in and out of the water that takes all the time.
Right, yep. And eventually everybody learns how to do that. And fortunately here, as I said, most of the portages have got a little dock, and they're kind of shallow, they're not real steep, so it's very easy for kids to maneuver and figure that out.
Yeah, it all feels pretty safe, right? I mean, we've had some little spills getting in and out, but yeah, so you get a little wet, you've got dry clothes in your dry bag. If you fell out of the canoe in the middle of the lake, I think, you know, canoes float, you'd probably just paddle your, you know, kick your way to shore, assuming you're wearing a PFD.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Have you ever flipped?
No, I have. No, I have not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to be kind of lame to flip, right? All right, here we go. Oh, it's another really pretty little portage here. All right, well, thanks, Steve.
Charles.
My old pal, Steve Gerlich. We've done many outdoor things together. And stick with us. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. Find Outdoor Explorer anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. We're also available online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, back in the studio now. Had a great canoeing trip with my friends in early October, and now recording from the studio, and some time has passed, and talking to Drew McElvain, who's a ranger at Nancy Lake State Recreation Area, and then later in the show, we're going to be talking about skating. Drew, I wanted to get you on board to talk about the recreation area as a whole and some of the details that we're not getting in, as I just talked to my buddies who I do stuff outdoors with. What do you do out there at the recreation area? What's the job of a ranger?
Well, out here we're responsible for management and patrol of the park area, which includes Nancy Lake as well as Willow Creek, and my area includes going up to Denali State Park, but that's a little further north than the area that you guys are talking about today. So we manage the park for especially as the seasons change and the recreation opportunities change, to get things opened and closed as the weather changes, also mitigate hazards and patrol the park.
So you're actually out there patrolling like in a canoe and just checking on things and making sure people are safe?
Depends on the mode of travel. Sometimes it's in our patrol trucks, sometimes it's in a boat, sometimes it's on snow machines, so it depends on what the day calls for.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a pretty good job.
Yeah, most of the time.
I guess you don't get to stay home, though, so it's not like for bad weather you don't have to go.
Not generally.
Yeah. So let's go over like what there is to do at the recreation area. We've talked about canoeing and staying at the cabins. That's probably the number one summer activity, right?
Yeah, there's 13 public use cabins here in the park, some that are pretty close to the road system that are easily accessible, so a few that are a little further out. There's also one large campground and one medium-sized campground, so we get a lot of campers out here in the summertime as well. A lot of people that also like to paddle out on the lakes. We have within the Nancy Lake State Recreation Area, there's over 130 lakes in the park. And
wow, I didn't know there were that many.
Yeah, they technically consider over 130 lakes, but some of them are quite small, so you might almost really consider them a pond.
Uh-huh.
But technically, they consider it over 130 lakes, and some are motorized, some are not. A big draw of the park is the Canoe Loop Trail, which is a series of about 13, it could include more lakes to get out to different areas of the park, but it's there's approximately an eight-mile loop that's all non-motorized that a lot of folks come out to canoe or kayak around, and that eight-mile loop could be extended to some of the other lakes on the southern portion of the park to get out to the lakes in the southern portion of the park as well out to the Little Sioux River.
Mm-hmm. And other activities. I mean, there's obviously winter activities. Is there much? There's not too much hiking or biking around there in the summer, is there? Or do they have opportunities for that?
There is some, not a whole lot though. The primary trail that gets hiked in the summertime is the Red Shirt Lake Trail, which mm-hmm. at the end of Nancy Lake Parkway. It's about a 3-mile trail that terminates at the north end of Red Shirt Lake. There's also the East Red Shirt Trail, which is a kind of a newer trail. It was along with the Cross Park Trail that was, it was an old dozer road back in the homesteader days, and it's recently been rehabilitated to a trail standard, so you can actually access the east side of Red Shirt Lake or even go across the park out to Lynx Lake Road and the park's highway.
Okay, cool. Wintertime, skiing, skating, snowmobiling. What do folks do to use the recreation area in the winter?
Yep, just as you mentioned, all of the above. There's once we have adequate snow, all areas south of Nancy Lake Parkway are open to use as snowmobiles or snow machines. And that's generally when we get about 18 inches of snow. All areas north of Nancy Lake Parkway are closed to motorized use, and there's 10 miles of ski trails on the north side of the road. So we'll get a fair amount of skiers as well as a lot of snow machiners going out to the public use cabins. There's also quite a few private cabins adjacent to the park that people will travel through the park to get to their private cabins. Also ice skating, as you mentioned, when we have frozen temperatures but no snow yet, A lot of folks were coming out last year with the weather that we had when all the lakes froze up.
Yeah, that was really fun. How often does that happen? It doesn't happen every year, right?
No, it doesn't. In fact, that was an atypical year since it got pretty cold, but we didn't really have any snow, so all the lakes froze up, and it was the most amount of people I had seen out here in that time of year since we didn't have the snow, but a lot of folks were taking advantage of the great ice skating conditions there at the early part of the winter. And then we also see quite a few ice fishermen out here in the wintertime, too.
Oh, really? What kind of fish are the fish in all the lakes or just the big ones? And are they stocked?
Some of them are stocked. There's fish in just about all the lakes. Some are stocked with rainbow trout, which are generally the lakes that are a little closer to the road. And then the most of the lakes that are on the south side of Nancy Lake Parkway have pike in them, as well as you might find some char in there as well. But the pike have become so well populated, that's generally what you're going to end up finding is pike out in the lake system.
Ugh. Yeah, that's a problem. Well, I guess not too much we can do about it.
Yeah, not at this point.
So let's talk about the history of the area. I understand that this is like the first unit in our state park system.
Yeah, it was. Nancy Lake State Recreation Area was the first designated park unit by the legislature within the Alaska State Park System, and that was done by the legislature in 1966. It's approximately 23,000 acres.
Wow. And, that's bigger than I realized. That's pretty big.
Yeah, so it's just shy of 23,000 acres. And a little bit of the history, as I have learned of it, that it was, I understand the thought behind it back in the 60s when it was first designated was when they thought that the state capitol was going to be moved to Willow, was that this would be kind of like a central park for Alaska with the planned metropolis of Willow, Alaska, the capital, being moved here, that it would kind of be the central park in this giant metropolis of Willow, which, of course, never happened.
Yeah, can say I actually remember some of that from when I was a kid about these votes that we had over and over again about moving the capital out of Juneau. And there was quite a bit of competition between Anchorage and Fairbanks as to which city would have the capital closer to it. And so they chose Willow as being sort of halfway in between, or sort of a fair compromise. And that would have meant building a huge city from scratch. And that was actually voted on to happen. And then when people saw how much it was going to cost, that's when it came to an end.
Yep, that's right. That's what I understand. The cost and the sticker shock there was kind of what halted the process.
But what's interesting, you know, if you compare 1966, you know, 50 years ago to almost 50 years ago to the present, is that the valley has grown up quite a bit around there. And now, you know, if the park had not been created, if it had been just allowed to develop, probably all those lakes would have a lot of cabins and houses on them, and sort of the residential portion of the valley is really moving up around the recreation area.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, the original master plan for the park back in the 60s was planned for lots of roads around the canoe loop system, numerous campgrounds, marinas, and a lot of development within the park, which, of course, didn't happen. And as the next management plan was written in the 80s, it was scaled back quite a bit to show what's currently in the park, and now there's a new management plan that's being drafted right now.
And now there's a recognition that we've got this wild land that feels, it may not be wilderness, but it kind of feels like it, really close to populated area, and so that's what you're protecting now. It's sort of kind of trying to keep it as is a little bit. True?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and that's true, and it's a mixture of protecting the area as well as providing the maximum amount of recreation opportunities for the public. And with this being a state recreation area as opposed to a state park, that's one of the emphasis area of the recreation area is to include as many recreation opportunities as possible.
Yeah, and you're doing a good job of that. So there's a canoe concession that's available at Raleigh Lake at the campground. If folks want to come out and try canoeing for the first time, this is an ideal place to do it, I think, is to rent a canoe from those folks. And they pre-position canoes, I think, at Tenaya Lake and at Red Shirt Lake and at Raleigh Lake. Any other places?
Yeah, they also have some over at Nancy Lake, I believe even at North Raleigh and Bald Lake. So they If there's a place that you want to get to within the park, they can get a canoe for you.
Yeah, and that's called Tippy Canoe, and we'll have their we'll have a link to their information on our website at alaskapublic.org. So if folks want to find some of that information about the state recreation area, you can check out the links, alaskapublic.org, and click on today's show on Nancy Lake. So I want to thank you very much, Drew, for being with us. Drew McElvain, ranger at the Nancy Lake State Recreation Area.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. So stick with us. We're going to talk about ice skating in the next portion of Outdoor Explorer as the show continues. We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking today about Nancy Lake, the Nancy Lake Recreation Area, with this fabulous canoe route, which is also a skiing route, also skating route, cabins. In the first half, I did my interview with my buddy Steve Gerlich out in a canoe, but for this part, we're actually recording in a studio, but also with an old buddy. Not too old, though. Marty Freeman is someone who spent a lot of time out there, and she introduced me to the Nancy Lake route when it was frozen. And we went out there, and I'm thinking my oldest son was maybe 10 years old or 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So it was well over 10 years ago. And it was a beautiful fall where the snow fell before the lakes froze, and then the lakes froze, and so you had this beautiful setting of smooth, clear ice. You remember the trip?
I remember it well, yes.
Yeah.
It was also cold.
It was very cold. It got colder while we were out there, too, and we had little kids along.
Right.
I had my son, Robin, was, as I said, probably about 10 or 12 years old, and then my daughter, Julia, was, I guess, about 8. Mm-hmm. And my younger son, Joey, was probably like 3 or 4 years old.
Well, I think a little older than that. But yeah. I know Sarah was there, too. And I thought she was about 6. But
yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's hard to remember. But in any event, I remember that I pulled him most of the way.
Right, right.
And we pulled sleds.
Right.
So that's such a really cool thing that I don't think exists many places where you can do a cabin-to-cabin skating trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember that we didn't do it all that well because, as I remember, we forgot to bring a saw.
Right, right. And the first cabin that we stayed in was fairly chilly.
That was Lynx Lake.
Lynx Lake. And then the second night we were over at James Lake, which is a much tighter cabin. And it was warmer and cozier, and things were pretty good at night, but quite cold coming out the next day. I can remember the last little bit was a walk along the road, and Sarah was walking in her sleeping bag.
I think you were a little worried.
Yeah, it was close to frostbite. But it was a great trip, too.
It was way below zero.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember a lot of things about that trip. One is that in the fall time, before the ice is covered with snow, you get these weird crystals mm-hmm. that form.
Yeah. We call them snow roses. I've seen them a few times out there where these beautiful floral patterns form, and they'll be 2-3 inches in diameter all across the surface of the lakes. And they make this crinkling noise when you skate through them, and they catch the light and refract rainbows, and it's quite spectacular.
Yeah, and they really do look like flowers.
Yep.
Very, very interesting and gorgeous, especially in that winter light when it's all mm-hmm. yellow and low to the
right.
horizon.
Yep.
And the other was the sound. Do you remember the sound from the ice?
You mean of it expanding, or the sound of the crystals on the
surface? That weird sort of space,
yes.
space sound that it makes.
Right. When the ice expands as it gets cold, and it makes a very strange reverberating noise.
Yeah, it's going to go, wah, 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 wah.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
A friend
yeah.
of mine calls them dragon wars that you're hearing. So.
And it's got a little bit freaky when you're out on the ice and it's doing that, actually.
Yep.
And you're doing this early in the season, so you're also kind of thinking about ice, thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was some open water on that trip.
Yeah, with the backcountry skating, you always have to be careful of open water. And in that trip, particularly the inlets and outlets, and some places the portages will dump you out along a small stream going into the lakes, and they can stay open a lot longer than the main surface of the lake does.
Mm-hmm. So you want to, like, especially at the edge of the lake, you mm-hmm. be especially careful.
Right.
Yeah. And on that trip, I believe we carried all our gear in those plastic mm-hmm. Sleds, which
right.
are really good if you don't have the I mean, you can spend a lot of money on, mm-hmm. on a polk or sort of a special pulling sled, but you don't really need one.
Right. You know, it's one of the nice things about skating is, in a way, it doesn't take a lot of gear. And you can, like you say, you can pull it in a plastic sled you get from Fred Meyer's, and it works just fine.
Yeah, those rigid sleds, and then you just mm-hmm. drill a couple of holes and tie a rope mm-hmm. to it, essentially.
Yep.
Which you can use skiing, too, but sometimes it'll come up and hit you in the back of the ankles mm-hmm. when you're skiing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we went again last fall. Mm-hmm. And I think it was in October. Was it late October? It was a lot colder last year.
Yeah, I think it might have been late October.
Yeah. And a lot of people went. Actually, we were probably among the first, but a lot of people went last fall because the snow was so light.
Right. And I think it was Alaska Day because I had the day off.
Right.
And it was nice. And
so really kind of mid-month.
Yeah. And one of the things that you can forget about skating is there's so little friction. You cover a lot of ground very easily. And so doing the canoe loop in a few hours from Anchorage as a day trip is actually quite doable on ice skates. So.
Yeah, that's one of the funny things is that we did the family trip with the little kids. Mm-hmm. We took two nights.
Right.
So we were just crawling along right. with these little guys. And then when we did it with you guys had Nordic skates and poles.
Right.
Blew my mind how fast we did it.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even get started that early from Anchorage.
Right.
Took a day off, got up there,
yeah.
zoom all the way through the entire route. And I think John's GPS said that we'd gone some crazy amount of distance because we were skating mm-hmm. around and around the lakes.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember how far it was. But.
Feels like the fastest thing you can do without wheels, really.
Right. Yeah.
So you guys have those Nordic skates. How do you like those?
I love those. They're great for backcountry skating because things like this with the canoe loop, you skate the lakes, and then when you come to a portage, you just clip the skate blade off, and then you're in your cross-country ski boots, and you can walk the portages very easily. So it makes it nice, and the cross-country ski boots are warmer and comfortable, so that makes it quite simple to do a trip like that.
Yeah, and I did that one in hockey skates, and so the disadvantage of hockey skates for the portages is you can do a portage on hockey skates, mm-hmm. but when it gets steep, it gets a little bit scary.
Right.
You really have to be pretty careful, and taking them on and off takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Also, they're a lot colder, so on a cold weather thing, you know, the Nordic skates are great. So do you recall how much you spent for your Nordic skates?
I don't. There are a couple of options. You can buy them in town through AMH and others, and then there's also a nordicskate.com online that sells them. But I would say they're in the vicinity of probably $100 to $150.
Right.
On the other hand, you don't outgrow them, and you don't wear them out.
Right, so, plus bindings, too.
Right, you have to have the binding, yeah.
Which can be easily $75, $100. Right. also, one of the things about the Nordic skates is that the skate blade has a very low sort of angle at the front of the skate. So when you're doing backcountry skating, you'll often run into bumps. And in the Nordic skates, you're less likely to tumble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you guys were skating with poles, too.
Right. It's partly for exercise, and it also sometimes can help with balance, but it also speeds you up, too.
Yeah.
So it's nice all around.
Yeah, you can really go fast. I remember, you know, there's a good number of people out there last year. Did you do a lot of backcountry skating last year?
I did some down at Potter Marsh, of course, and then also up at the slough. Is it Rabbit Slough that's called?
Mm-hmm.
Up in,
you can go a long way there.
In Matsu, and that's really fun out through the hay flats, Palmer Hay Flats.
So I think everybody's worry about skating on lakes is that they're going to fall through the ice, mm-hmm. and I recall you telling me that you have actually done that.
I did do that once. I didn't remember that you remembered. I was down at Portage Lake and got too close to the face of the glacier and hit a place that I just went through. And I think adrenaline took over, and I was able to kick and pop myself out and onto the ice. And I think adrenaline was pumping so hard that I didn't even get cold. I had to then skate back a couple miles across the lake. So it's one of the few things that can still bring me just bolt upright thinking about it.
Do you remember what it was like to be in the water? I mean, I think it would be utterly terrifying.
It was terrifying, but it was also, it focuses your attention on the important thing of getting out. So it didn't last long. But.
Well, I mean, if you're in the way in the backcountry and you go through the ice, and I heard several people did last year on Nancy Lake system, and I went through some overflow and got wet, you know, where you'll have overflow on top of the ice and then a thin coat of ice on top of that, you fall through. And you suddenly think, but then you just get wet. You don't actually go in, but you went in.
Right.
And then you've got to get back before you freeze.
Right. Yep.
So how did you do that? You just skated
I just skated hard. And like I say, I think my heart was pumping so hard that I didn't even get cold in the couple miles back across the lake and then changed once I got to the car. But it's a good idea to have at least, you know, rudimentary things with you. Extra socks are a great thing. Yeah. Some, depending on where you are and who you're with and so forth, sometimes taking a rope is a good thing. And some people take, if they don't have poles with them, something that they can use to jab in the ice to help pull themselves out if they need to.
Right. You didn't need that. And I wonder why.
I don't know.
I think the ice held enough
that sometimes ice is breaking in front of you as you try to get out. And this time it didn't. It held. And so I was able to kick my legs up out of the water and sort of roll over.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to Native elders who say that the key to getting out of getting on the ice when you fall through is to get your body flat so that you're not trying to get out while your body's vertical.
Right.
And then roll onto the ice. Yeah. Yep. So did anybody see you go through?
There were other people on the lake that day, and quite a few, but they were farther away. So I think they heard me go through because I hollered pretty loud.
I'm glad you're still here, Marty.
Thank you. Me too.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Nancy Lake system, and we sort of did the Nancy Lake system when liquid in the first half of the show, and now we're talking about it when it's solid, when during the wintertime, when it's frozen, and there's still a lot of fun stuff to do up there. So you've done some trips with your kids, some sort of mother-daughter trips. And tell us about some of the different things you've done out there.
Well, with my older daughter, when she was probably 10 or 11 at the time, we did the canoe loop. And in that case, I took just an inflatable kayak with us. And it was a challenge to bungee everything onto the deck of the kayak. But it was easy because then we could just, each of us could have basically a day pack. And I could portage the kayak by myself because it was lightweight. So that was fun. And I've also done another trip with her just out to one of the cabins in Nancy Lake and just spent the night and swam and canoed and played there. And with my younger daughter as well and some of her friends, we've done trips out to the cabins. They're such a tremendous resource having the cabins there.
Yeah. So summer, winter, both?
Those trips were all summer trips, water-based, and a couple of them were out of Red Shirt Lake. And one of the options there is you can hike in about a three-mile hike to Red Shirt Lake. You can rent canoes, and the canoes are based at the lake, and they give you a key to the lock, and you have to carry your paddles and your life jackets in, but the canoe is on site. And so it makes a really nice trip. It's a nice way to do it with kids because you have less to carry.
Awesome. I didn't know that. So you rent it from that booth that's on Raleigh Lake?
Correct, yep.
So you can probably just drive up and take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you can call ahead and do a reservation, and it's all set for you when you get there.
Yeah. So where can you go from Red Shirt Lake? Just around the lake?
Just around the lake. But the lake is fun. It has a number of islands in it. I think there are three or four public use cabins. One of the cabins is on an island, which is really fun with kids.
Really fun.
They love that. And, you know, there are lots of waterfowl there, good places to explore. We found good blueberry picking later in the summer.
Nice. So, yep. Sounds like this is one of your favorite areas.
It is. I hadn't realized until you asked me about the program about how many times I've been there, but it adds up over the years and in various ways.
Yeah, Steve was saying he thought he'd been there 50 times.
That's a lot. I'm not that big a number, but
yeah. So tell me about some of your winter trips. We talked about skating, but you've done some skiing out there too?
We've done skiing out there as well, skied around, skied from the Lynx Lake canoe loop over into Red Shirt and back, just bushwhacking on skis. And we've also taken...
So just right through the woods, don't worry about a trail.
Yeah.
Wait till there's plenty of snow for that.
Those were years when there was plenty of snow. And, you know, have to follow the maps pretty carefully because it's country where you can get lost.
It's a fun orienteering challenge. But actually, once you're out there, it all looks the same.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, I hate to say it. But
if you're away from the lakes, it certainly does, yeah. And we've done Thanksgiving out there in a couple different cabins.
Tell me about that.
We skied in with the turkey on a sled. And in that time, we had rented the two cabins on Lynx Lake.
Those little ones.
But we had probably eight people there for a big Thanksgiving dinner, complete with turkey. So
how did you cook the turkey in Anchorage?
Yes, we did.
And then how did you wrap up the turkey?
I think just, you know, lots of tin foil and plastic and put it in the sled.
And it was still warm when you got to the cabin?
I think it was definitely still thawed.
And what else? Did you like a sled full of all the trimmings and
Absolutely,
stuff?
Absolutely, yeah.
What a fun idea.
It was great.
So, and then you'd spend the night or take off?
We did spend the night there, yes. Yep. And we've done it also. There are some of the cabins that are on Nancy Lake proper that are a very short walk in, a quarter of a mile walk, and those are great with family. And again, you can do those for things like Thanksgiving or birthday parties or whatever. So
Wow, I didn't know they were that close to the road.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think that the skiing thing sounds interesting. I know your husband John is very handy with maps and all kinds of stuff. That sounds, I mean, I guess with GPS it would be pretty easy, mm-hmm. but I think it could be potentially challenging to just break off just across open country. It's kind of like the terrain there reminds me a bit of Kincaid Park, hilly, sort of broadly spaced birch trees mm-hmm. and a few small spruce trees.
Right. Since I'm a forester, I have to mention the trees because one of the interesting things I think about going into Nancy Lakes is when you start out near the road, you're in a birch forest that's fairly dense and young, and that forest started when the railroad was being built, and there were lots of fires that happened along the railroad, so it cleared it out, and the forest you see when you start from the road is that younger forest. Mm. And as you drive into that older forest that is more typical of the northern part of the Mat-Su, where the older birch, and they're quite spaced out, and there's a lot of grass undergrowth with them and so forth. And it's because you're getting out of that zone from the old railroad fires.
It's almost like a park setting, right? Mm-hmm. Like within the Rockies, what they call like Estes Park area, where you've got big trees pretty far mm-hmm. apart and lots of grass, which is a very pleasant place to be.
Yeah, it is.
The bushwhacking is not nearly as difficult as it is in a lot of parts of Alaska.
Yeah, in the winter when things are frozen, it allows you to move almost anywhere.
Yeah. So tell me about how you pack up for a winter trip to a cabin.
Well, cabins make it somewhat simple because you don't have tents and that makes it easy. There are bunks there, but you still do need, well, some of the bunks I think have mattresses now. Some of them don't, so you need a foam pad. You need your sleeping bag, of course, multiple warm layers, and your food, the basic things. There's a wood stove there. As you mentioned, from having forgotten a saw at one point in time, it's good to take something that you actually cut wood with.
but actually, the wood is, I mean, it was just there. And you have to search for wood because people have already searched out.
So, yes, it's a heavily used area.
It's a good idea, especially in the wintertime, to bring some stuff with you.
Mm-hmm. Can be, yeah, exactly. And let's see, what else?
You didn't mention stove, but you need something to cook on.
Yeah, exactly. Cooking stove and fuel and... you know, sometimes we bring a thermos as well. It's nice to have hot drinks on the way, especially if you have kids. It's great to be able to stop partway through and have hot cocoa.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's not too different from other winter trips other than you don't need to carry a tent, and that's a real advantage. So.
And water-wise, you can pretty much just melt whatever
mm-hmm.
you find out there.
You can melt snow, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about some just good memories out there. This last trip I just did, one of the neat things was at night at James Lake in October, you get a very dark sky, which is gorgeous. And mm-hmm. and so many of our outdoor trips in Alaska, if you do them only in the summer, you never really see that many stars.
Mm-hmm, right.
But we saw tons of stars and the lights of Anchorage glowing over the horizon.
Right.
So pretending that Anchorage had been exploded or something, right? and lots of planes coming in and landing. Right. You see these dotted lights overhead. It was very, very peaceful and kind of interesting and pleasant to be out there and just spent the evening talking around candlelight in the cabin.
Mm. Yeah, it is nice. One of my favorite memories, I think, was the first time I skated there. And it was before we were doing much backcountry skating and kind of stumbled into it. We thought we would go up and skate. I had a meeting in the morning in the valley, and then in the afternoon we went out to Nancy Lakes, my husband and I, and skated, and the ice was perfect. It was just this beautiful black ice, and it was so clear it was disconcerting. It mm-hmm. felt like it couldn't possibly be frozen, and then if you lay down, you could see bubbles 12, 14 inches down in there. It was bomb-proof, but it took us a couple of hours of skating to get used to the idea that you were not just skating on a quarter inch or something because it was so clear and completely smooth. And we were so taken by it that we skated in several lakes, and we just finally decided we just can't go home, and there was not another soul out there, you know, because without snow, people aren't out there skiing or snow machining. And at that time, skating hadn't really taken off in the backcountry, and so we wound up staying overnight. And apologies, State Parks, I think I paid for the cabin after the fact, but there was nobody there, so we stayed in a cabin. We had only brought lunch and a day pack, and so we finished lunch. We got the cabin warm enough that without sleeping bags, we were okay for the night.
Sweet.
And we got up before breakfast and skated out and went to the cafe in Willow for breakfast. So
this is before kids.
Before kids. This was a long time ago, but it was a lot of fun. And you mentioned the sound that the ice makes when it's making those funny cracking noises, and it was doing that all over the lake in the dark, and it was just wonderful. Sometimes we just lay down and listen to it, and you feel the vibrations and the jerk of the ice cracking, and it's pretty wonderful.
And it blows your mind how close you are to Anchorage, right?
Yeah.
And I remember, I think that last year we had some of that very black, clear ice where it's kind of vertigo.
It is.
Right? Another skating backcountry skating trip we did together, I don't remember where it was, but I remember there was a frozen fish in the ice. And my daughter.
Up off the Glen Highway.
Yeah, yeah. My daughter, I was talking about doing this conversation with you, and she said, oh, is that where we went, where we saw the fish? I mean, she was a little tiny girl, but she still remembers lying on the ice and looking down at this fish that was down into the water. And you'll also see pondweed and stuff like that. Such a magical thing because it doesn't come every year.
Right. It doesn't. It's maybe every 3 years you get a good skating year where it freezes before the snow covers the water.
Yeah. So do you have any plans for that this year?
Well, I'm watching, but it hasn't been cold enough to freeze yet, so we'll see.
Well, fortunately, I mean, this time of year, the cabins are pretty easy to reserve because it's not that easy to get out there. It's probably very quiet there right now.
Right, exactly. I would say just on backcountry skating, too, another loop we did one time was the canoe loop down in Kenai. And same idea.
Swan Lake.
And there was lots of wildlife sign and, you know, very few people out there because it's
gorgeous.
Something that folks do much yet, so it's wonderful.
Well, you mentioned the year when the snow fell on the on the water and the canoeing through snow. You got to tell that just before we close up here because we're almost out of time.
Okay. Well, it was a fall sort of like this where the fall went on and on, and we didn't have snow yet, so we decided, well, we'll get in one more canoe trip and went up to Nancy Lakes and canoed in a couple of lakes and camped out And I should say they're also good tent sites, lots of places, too.
Yeah.
So we camped out.
And with air containers, too.
And in the morning, we woke up, and it had snowed 3 inches. And so we were a little disconcerted, because when we went down to the lake, it looked like just a solid mat of snow, but the snow was just floating on the water. Mm. And so the water must have been, 31.9 or something. It just wasn't melting the snow, but it also wasn't frozen ice at all. And so we canoed back, and the snow was just like a blanket, and it just peeled back in these curves off the bow of the canoe as we went. And there were otters coming down and playing. You hear stories about otters sliding down the bank, and that's what they were doing out at one of the lakes.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Well, that's a good place to stop because we're not going to top that story. thanks, Marty. Yeah. This was really fun. It's fun going back through these old memories.
It is. Good to talk with you, Charles.
Yeah. So that was Marty Freeman, an old friend who obviously I've done some outdoor stuff with and with her family. And earlier we heard from Drew McElvain, who's the ranger up there at Nancy Lake. And we started with the interview I did back in October in a canoe with Steve Gerlich. So that's our show today about Nancy Lake. Our producer is Monica Gokey. Grace Bojean helps us with scheduling guests. My name is Charles Wolfer. Thanks for being with us on Outdoor Explorer. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.